Many of you may not have heard of the following name. The last name probably, but not the first name. Rabbi Mordechai Feinstein. Many of us, all of us probably know his brother, Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe led American Jewry for decades. He moved here. Rav Moshe emigrated to America in 1936 to the Lower East Side. And for the next 50 years, led American Jewry and really the entire world. And his word was literally the last word in halacha. The day he died in 1986, it was actually Tainus Esther, when he passed away. His brother of Mordechai did not have the same fate. His brother of Mordechai was a huge Eloi, tremendous gaon, a genius. In the 20s, him and Rav Moshe are both leading different Jewish communities in Russia, both secretly and very quietly and privately, ensuring kashrut standards and mikvos throughout the Russian Jewish community. And both were teaching Torah through the droves and really spreading Torah. It came to a point in the mid-30s where Moshe felt there was too much pressure and it was too dangerous and he couldn't live there anymore. He just couldn't move and live in Russia anymore. And he moved out and he left and he went to the Golden Medina. He went to America. His brother stayed. His brother stayed and led a life of secrecy and silence and led and taught Torah in basements, in quiet, you know, in the middle of the night. And eventually was murdered in the Shoah. What's remarkable about these two brothers is that in 1936, if you stopped Rav Moshe on the street in the Lower East Side and you asked him who was forced into a greater exile, who's going to have a brighter future, who felt stuck, Rav Moshe would say it was him. He was stuck. Who was he teaching Torah to? In 1936, what yeshivas were there that he would be able to? It was nothing. His brother, Rav Mordechai, he was in a good position. But we know different. Just this past week, you may have noticed it on an email that was sent out yesterday to the shul. Just this past week, we had the Bergen Record came to the front tent. They called me up. They wanted to know what shuls are doing in preparation for Yom HaNoraim. And they wanted to come and take pictures and videos of the service. And that ended up being that Thursday morning, it was a balagan. It was the first morning that we're actually using the tent. And it was pouring outside for those that came in the rain. And every standard that we were expecting, we put tefillin on beforehand. It was pouring. You couldn't do that. Everybody came to the minyan. We got the minyan a little bit late. And you have this photographer there who really didn't know anything about Judaism, let alone Orthodox Judaism, was sitting and taking pictures of this really balagan. We didn't get a minyan right away. We couldn't even start davening because the rain was so loud that you couldn't hear. Josh had to lead the tefillos, and Baruch Hashem, it all worked out. After davening was over, this very nice photographer, his name was Mitsu, came over to me, you know, and he said, "What is with this horn? What is with this, you know, the shofar?" That's all he knew. When he called me on the phone the day before, that's all they really wanted to photograph. That's all they were really interested in was pictures with Rabbi Green and the shofar. That's what they wanted to see. That's what they hear of. The Jews have this thing that they blow, you know, on the first day of the year. And he said, "What is this?" So I tried to really explain to him, you know, what's the shofar? What does it represent? It should come from a ram's horn, ideally. It comes from the, you know, I tried to explain to him a little bit about the story of the Akedah and what happened there and what this represents. And when we blow the horn on Rosh Hashanah, it serves as a defendant for us in court. And the schusim of the Akedah is a reminder to Hashem to be kind and gentle to us on our day of judgment. But what really struck me when I was explaining this to him, and sometimes when you explain this to an outsider, you really are stuck with very fundamental, simple questions. What I was bothered by is, It's one thing that we want to remember the Akedah on Rosh Hashanah. It's another thing, why do we remember the Akedah specifically with the horn? What is it about the ram's horn specifically? Why not have one of these simanim? We should have food associated. We love food. What is it about the ram's horn specifically that this is what we remember the shofar with? Give us a minute and we'll go back. If you think about it, just imagine the scene from the ram's perspective at the Akedah. You have Avram and Yitzchak over there. Avraham is struggling to do what he's about to do. Finally, the Malach stops him in the middle. And there's a ram. There's a ram that's there witnessing this. And the ram is stuck. The Torah says very clearly, Visa Avram is Einav. Avram is told to stop what he is doing with Yitzchak. The isle is stuck in the thickets, in the bulrushes, on the mountain, and he's specifically stuck with his keren, with his horn. He's stuck there, and he can't move. And if you think from that perspective, the ram is like, what am I doing here? What's the point of me right now in this scene? I can't move. I can't go anywhere. I am where I am, and I am a subject of fate. There's nothing that I am, I'm purposeless right here. And what happens to this ram in a matter of moments is the ram becomes and transitions from a subject of fate to a person of destiny. He becomes a subject of destiny. The ram eventually is taken out by Avraham and used in place of Yitzchak Avinu, and the rest is history. Chazal tell us, the Mishnah and Avos tells us, that this ram isn't any random isle that was stuck there, but this ram was created Misheshes Yimei Breishis. And Rav Schwab explains that this ram was exactly the way it was supposed to be. It was exactly in the right place at the right time. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, already 2,000 years beforehand, wanted Dafka where the ram should be. And he says to us, Rav Schwab writes, wherever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us in life to be, that's exactly where we are supposed to be. So this ram may have in perception looked like and felt stuck, yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it exactly where it is. And this is to borrow the language of Rabbi Soloveitchik. He says, we have a choice in life. We can be victims of our fate, or we could be subjects of destiny. That's our choice. For the past 6 months, many of us felt that the world was acting upon us, that we literally were stuck in our places. We were just looking outside of our windows of our homes, not knowing what was going to happen next. And on a certain level, that was 100% true. But I have to tell you that we could take the life that we have into our own actions. What are we going to do with that? What are we going to do with those experiences, with that perspective? How is that going to change our life forever? Many people already have told me that they have literally started to make serious life-altering decisions as a result of those moments and those months away in quarantine. Those people don't feel stuck. How are we going to change that way? Our rabbis tell us there are two different ways that Chazal explained travelers in the words of Chazal. There's Holchei Drachim and there's Ovrei Drachim. They sound the same. They're almost synonymous. Ovrei Drachim are people that are traveling and just want to get from place to place. They don't care necessarily about the journey. It's really about the destination. What happens, what they see on every rest stop and where they go, who they encounter, it doesn't really matter to them. They just want to get somewhere. Everything else doesn't matter. Then there are Holchei Drachim. Holchei Drachim, they try to squeeze out everything out of their journey in life. everywhere they go, every person they encounter, every situation they are in, they try to find meaning in that place. The Torah tells us in Parashas Vayishlach something so amazing, that after Yaakov and Esav meet up and they separate ways, the Torah says Yaakov was holech lidarko. Yaakov was a holech derech. In fact, after we recite Tfilas Derech, many people have the minhag to recite this pasuk three times. Yaakov was a holech derech. As opposed to Esav, Esav turns to Yaakov and says, I'm leaving. Yavor na Adoni lifnei avot. Yavor na. He was an ovrei derech. Esav wasn't about where you go. It wasn't about the things that we encounter, the experiences that we have. It was about getting from place to place. Yaakov was somebody that said, you know what? Where are the stops that I have in 5780? Where did we experience? What did we experience this year? What are we going to do? How are we going to change? How do we become different? How are we going to grow as a result of this? Are we having these conversations in our homes? Are we having these conversations with our spouses, with our families? Are we having these conversations with ourselves? These are questions that we need to ask ourselves. Because a Jew is never stuck. We should never feel that we're ever stuck in a situation. We are never people that are victims of fate. We are subjects of destiny. Just like that ram was exactly where they were supposed to be. We blow the shofar to show. And every single time we're going to blow that shofar, we're going to remember. I am not stuck like that ram. I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And that's as we begin our journey and our pathway to 5781, to Tavshin Pei Aleph. New pathways. It should be a Teishnat Pesach Echad, a new opening. A new opening to our lives, but we should never leave behind the past. This year, if somebody says, 5780, I don't remember what happened. I don't remember how I changed. If maybe for other years, you can argue that, you can say that, but to say that about this year would be a tremendous waste. It would be a tremendous waste. I give us all a bracha as we now begin the official preparation for the Yamin Noraim season with Rosh Hashanah, less than a week away, and we're about to recite Slichos. May this be a year where we internalize and we think about how we're going to grow, what we're going to change as a result of what we experienced, and yet we still don't even know what's going to be. The only thing we have that we are in control of, and we learned the hard way this year, there is very little we are in control of. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch is in control. It's how we react to the situations that we are in, to never underestimate the value of our actions and what we can do, regardless of where we are and what is going on around us. With that, I wish everybody aksiva v'chasima tova. It should be a year of health, number one, of health, of growth, of safety, of parnasa, of hatzlacha, for us, our families, our children, for our community, for our shul, for Klal Yisrael, and really for the entire world. And I have to say how just so special it is to see everybody and have the ability to daven all together, inside, outside. It's so meaningful to myself, and I know people have been telling me how meaningful it is to all of us to be able to gather together and to never underestimate just that the Beis HaKnesses means a house of gathering. They gather together over davening. How appreciative we are to thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that. I agree to the begin in moments, and we will daven inside as well.